Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
The following is a presentation of the Force Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is Force Center, a show about Star Wars, pop culture, and the ultimate adventure, life itself. We've been having a lot of adventure, getting our coffee and our stream started, but we're ready to go. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw.
I'm Ken Napsok. I think I'm ready to go.
And I'm Jennifer Landa. I have my coffee.
And just like our Star Wars heroes, we're going to go whether we're ready or not and get started on this episode of The Bad Batch Report. Ken, was that a cartoon that Wrecker watched in this episode? Or?
It was a high adventure, slightly a popular 80s television show that we don't address as much, theme music. It was a car jumping. You got to jump a car.
I know that one. Yeah.
I also thought of that show and debated whether I wanted to say its name on air or not. So I think you've made the decision for me because that jump was totally big of jump. That particular 80s show.
Yep. Wow.
I was a big fan. I had all the matchboxes.
I had the cars too, and I had no adults pull me aside and say, "That's what that car means."
I know.
And I was like, "Hey, wait, what?" Anyway, the 80s, everybody. But we are not here to discuss a show from the 80s. We're here to discuss a show from this year. What year is it? 2024. It is season 3, episode 12 of The Bad Batch, entitled Juggernaut, directed by Stuart Lee, written by Ezra Nachman. Story editor, as always listed, is Matt Machenovitz. Let's get right into it. Ken, what was your overall reaction to this episode? Love it, like it, struggle with it, accept it for what it was?
I accepted it for what it was, a burst of Star Wars action that I think I really needed, that I really enjoyed and had a lot of fun with, which is interesting because I think it's bookended by some darker moments as has been, going on with the season. But I enjoyed seeing the team in action for a good cause.
Yeah. Yeah. Jennifer, how did you feel? Were you surprised? Did you enjoy it?
I wish I had watched it on my TV. I was watching it on my phone in the doctor's office waiting room this morning. Not ideal. Not ideal. It was broken up in a few pieces, right? And I'm just like, oh, there was so much great action. And of course, by the end, I was really drawn in. But overall, I liked it. I just wish I'll have to watch it again on my TV.
Yeah, I mean, I understand this is how Christopher Nolan says you should watch films on your phone in bursts in doctor's office. That's what he demands. Mm-hmm. I had a better viewing experience, but I fought for it. I had an extremely busy day yesterday and I was really exhausted. And I was like, I'm going to stay up until midnight. And then I'm going to go to bed at 10 and set my alarm for 11:50. Mm-hmm. But I really wanted to watch this one at midnight because as the show is getting to its last episodes, like I want to make sure that I'm really experiencing it as a fan to the best of my ability. So I got up at midnight. I got out my little tech action figure and pointed him toward the screen in case he returned and enjoyed the episode that way. It was great to see the action on the television, at midnight. I really liked that the episode did feel like a return to Star Wars action and a return to earlier seasons of The Bad Batch with a version of The Batch doing a daring raid, but because of the entire context of the mission and what has happened to them, it also had this incredibly bittersweet, you can't go home again, because I think a lot of the meaning was the way they were doing the action, why they were doing the action. It wasn't that Wrecker was trying to have the carefree attitude of like, give us a real challenge, we can do this, but just everything was laced with fear and trauma and it wasn't freestyling fun back in the Clone Wars days where we kind of laugh and crash our way through everything. It was this sort of, it was like a high school reunion of like, well, there's some parts of this that are nice to come back to, but there's some parts of this that are returning to face trauma.
Yeah.
So I really liked that the action was Star Wars fun action that hasn't been as prominent in Bad Batch, but it also felt like it contained the meaning of the episode to me.
Yeah, I think I had a couple thoughts of, it's we're long removed from fighting crabs for treasures, right? Like this is more serious all around it. And you already edging towards the themes there. But I love what this show has done. Obviously, I love what this season has done. So the use of the action here was really, I think, extra effective, and just had some of the best action we've had in Star Wars in a while. So it was a good mix and mash.
I said whoa out loud alone in my apartment at midnight. Yeah it was some damn good action.
Whoa.
So let's get into the big ideas, the big themes. Ken, where did you start? What did you feel in your gut this episode was about?
I mean, I think there's interesting themes of what captivity are pretty clear, but who's in the prison and what keeps you there and do you change? I'm basically talking about Rampart and Rampart's beard. There was a moment I was like, oh, he's going to go good. Oh, no, he's still an a-hole. He's doing no change. But the ideas of two people, Omega and Crosshair, really having to face fears for the benefit of others, right? That's been kind of this big thing and this dueling banjo of stories with them, which is interesting. I love that it's kind of come down to Crosshair and Omega. That's not something I don't think I would have expected in season one or can even come out of season one. So here we are and him having to go back and that little moment of, a secret he had kept, it wasn't that he was lying or hiding information. He just, there might be a path forward. I just need to face my darkest fears. I don't know if I want to do that. And Omega has already done it for the benefit of the others. And then that opens up to even now more specifically with the three, quote unquote specimens in front of her. So love that. Into the pit of darkness they go.
Yeah. I loved all the layers with Crosshair and look forward to discussing them even more, but to see from last episode, to see how desperately he didn't want Omega to make the choice that she did, to go back, supported her in that episode. But then to hear him talk about it, like she was a hero and she is obviously, but like, because when Wrecker pushes him, was like, well, why'd you let her go? And he says, like, she saved this entire city. That was just a really beautiful moment of is seeing the complexity of Crosshair. We're like, of course I didn't want to let her go. Of course I didn't want to watch her take that risk. But now that she did it, I'm kind of sitting here in awe of her and being inspired by her. I just love the way he delivered. Like, yeah, she saved this entire village, this entire city. Yeah. Jennifer, how did the episode strike you? What was your sort of gut reaction to what it was about?
Yeah, I guess facing one's fear for the greater good, and that it's normal that you would not want to go back to this place that caused so much trauma. With our heroes, typically, and especially in movies and TV shows, they just put on the brave face and I can do this, right? And this was show really does it reels, deals with it in a more realistic way, where even this hardened clone, it does not want to go back there. And I thought that was a really great choice on even Omega's expression when she's there. It's just like fear, like any person would have in this situation. It doesn't matter that they're heroes. So I really liked that.
Yeah, it's extremely a human reaction to facing fear. Yeah, because it is like it's easy to face fear if you're not actually afraid.
Right.
That's the whole point of like, I am afraid and I'm going to do it anyway. I really agree with both of you. I thought that it had lots of great sort of levels to the explicit idea of facing your fear. But also, like Bad Batch always does in a really good way, kind of getting under the skin a little bit with almost a more mythic idea of the sort of not just passing through the belly of the beast, like the mythic sort of challenge of the underworld, but what like we pass through the underworld. We have to go back to the underworld is this extra level of bravery that you're both talking about. And I think it is that like not the sort of first steps of your adventure of the dark cave. What's in there? I'm scared to go in, but I have to go in and find out. It's the I bleep and know what's in the dark cave.
Yeah.
And we all have to go back to the dark cave. And I think they are all going back to the dark cave in the belly of the beast in this different way. I love that Wrecker kind of speaks for the audience and says, you know, she went off and Wrecker says, yeah, and they've got her again, kind of underlines it, you know, kind of maybe gets ahead of the audience member who's like, where are we going? They got it again. But then instead of it, that being like a flaw or a criticism, the show uses that return to give it the strength. It is a repetition and that's the power of it. I was Googling just for, Star Wars planet names for our canon talk of like, have we been to this planet before? And it popped up, which many other people might've recognized immediately, but I didn't know that the name of the prison planet Erebus, is a Greek mythological figure in term. This is the part of Wikipedia I pulled out that had particular relevance. The name Erebus is often used by ancient authors to refer to either to the darkness of the underworld itself, or the subterranean region which souls of the dead travel through to reach Hades. And it is sometimes used synonymously with Tartarus or Hades. So I thought that was great to really reinforce this idea of they are Omega's literally returning to a place she doesn't want to go to. But I think Crosshair and the whole batch is returning to fears in places that they do not want to go to. So much of it is obviously, I think, keyed off by Crosshair's, like you were saying, Ken, not only his admission of he has a shaky last chance idea of trying to trust Rampart, but I thought it was a kind of a big emotional step forward to him, for him, that he says clearly to Hunter, because Tantus isn't a place I ever wanted to go back to, and rubs his hand. Jennifer, how did you feel about Crosshair kind of getting to the point to be able to express honestly and, you know, pretty openly that like, yeah, they did horrible things to me there, and I have physical and emotional scars and I don't want to go back to there. How did that affect you?
It's like he went through therapy. to be able to express his feelings, to be that self-aware, to be able to vocalize it and not feel like he's being weak, that takes a lot, right? And the only, obviously we know he didn't see a psychologist or a therapist. So who was that? How did he get to this point? Well, we know his relationship with Omega. It's just really, and the thing that's fascinating is that it feels very organic. It doesn't feel shoehorned in. This is the evolution of this character that we have seen over the course of this show. And it's fascinating. I would have never expected that. And I would have never expected him to come this far.
Yeah. Yeah. I love that it is. It's emotional vulnerability from his Omega therapy. And I think a little bit from, you know, other clones, you know, rescuing him in that. But, you know, primarily Omega, of course. But I also like that he's still on a journey. He's not just kind of like boldly optimistic. But I think part of the reason that he also held this back was like, it's not a slam dunk. It means confronting Rampart, who we can't trust. And I'm not sure that that is worth it to go back to Tantus. Like, there is still a little pessimism of not like the rah, rah, we can do anything the way Omega has been. Like, it doesn't matter. We'll take a risk. We got to go back to Tantus. And he's like, I got this thing in my back pocket, but the odds are long. Ken, how do you feel about Crosshair's levels of emotions in not wanting to go back to Tantus?
I love it. It's the depth of Crosshair that has slowly rolled out on the show from season one till now. And we've talked a lot about, we had our Tech versus Crosshair subjective war last week. But it's just like, why I keep being pulled in by his story so much. And one of the themes I had was this, again, this idea of captivity and breaking free. And Emery's still kind of a prison. And she has a great question asked to her, you know, Emery, you know, or your statement, yeah, Emery, you don't have to do this. And I think there's a lot of, you don't have to do this. That's with Emery, we're looking at more of a, you could make a better decision. But I look at it in terms of Crosshair of like, I don't want to do this. This isn't necessarily the best, but I feel as though I'm going to make this choice to break free from this kind of emotional captivity that he's been in, to move forward and make a decision inspired by Omega and the greater good, clearly a lesson he's learned. And believe it or not, it's Rampart. It was a great line. After all, we're in this together. I don't know if I trust him, but it is definitely a theme for the episode that Crosshair takes a big step forward with that.
Yeah. Yeah. I also felt like a part of what Crosshair was facing was not wanting to look fully, not only in his torture at the hands of the Imperials, but his time with the Imperials and what he did and the way they treated him. I thought he also probably, he practically doesn't want to trust Rampart, but it felt like he did not want to face Rampart. And I think there was great subtle delivery on, you know, he took Nala to Tantus after we decommissioned Topoka City. The way he delivers decommissioned is like, he knows like when I participated in the slaughter of our home is what he means, but he can't quite bring himself to say it. The second Rampart sees him, Rampart tries to control him by using his number, not his name. Yep. So I think that there's a lot in just seeing Rampart that makes Crosshair have to face the reality that he did horrible things and that he allowed himself to still be a number, not a person. Ken, how did you feel about the way Crosshair, you know, felt about and confronted Rampart himself, if that was a part of Crosshair facing his multiple layers of fears?
Yeah, no, I that's why I was fascinated by the fact that Rampart doesn't immediately go good, right? And it's not even quite the comical effect of Hux going, yeah, I just want the Empire to lose because they wronged me. It's just, he's still Rampart. And that means a lot to Crosshair in terms of the damage he caused. So I like the exchange. I like the use of the number. I like that Rampart is still Rampart, if that makes sense, for the story of Crosshair, that it isn't a all's forgiven happy reunion. Can't be.
Yeah. I kind of felt like, you know, I agree with you that there's a lot in this episode about captivity and choices and as always. But I also felt like Rampart is just an a-hole. And like, there's a lot of, I want to talk more about sort of Imperial machinery and the way people get caught up in that. But it feels like if the Republic had never fallen and there was a new age of glory and beauty and peace, Rampart would still be a little piece of blank. That's who that guy is, which was really fascinating to me. Jennifer, how did you feel about sort of the Rampart part of the story and Crosshair's relationship to him?
This is where I have the memory of a flea, because I was like, oh, this guy, he obviously has a history with Crosshair. And again, I'm in the doctor's office. I'm waiting for my turn. I didn't have a chance to go back and see where I've seen this character before. I was like, he reminds me so much of the villain of the guy in Rapunzel. I was stuck on that. Like, why I needed to go and like figure out. I'm like, oh, okay. There's obviously a backstory that in my watching history that I forgot about. So He seems like a real jerk.
Yeah.
An
ongoing challenge in these eras of Star Wars storytelling is to make, I think, the Imperials unique enough that we really remember them, and the First Order officers as well. I think it is an ongoing challenge. There's a couple of moments in various publishing stuff where like the Imperial, the First Order officer isn't the point, but they're like, oh man, for me, that's like, if you're doing some Star Wars storytelling, bring some spice for the Imperials, because you need the variety. To keep them different. I also want to talk a little bit about kind of this facing fear and returning to the belly of the beast, kind of what I was going on about at the top. I feel it is a little bit that way for Hunter and Wrecker because they have been here before for months, pulling on desperate strings to find Omega. They've been on the run since the Clone Wars, with the Empire getting stronger and stronger. And back in the Clone Wars day, they would just bop into any separatist facility and there's just like no fear, right? They were the best of the best, and they always found their way out and, you know, racked up their victories with a scratch in the wall. And I think they're so wounded by reality that dropping into a really secure Imperial facility isn't just like easy breezy for them. There are high stakes. I think the fact that there was a possibility of Wrecker falling was extremely reminiscent of, hey, the last time we bopped into a highly guarded Imperial facility, we lost one of our own. So I felt like a lot of that action had this sort of, that's what I meant about kind of can't go home again, of this used to be, this kind of episode in season one was kind of bouncy and fun and we can do anything.
Quippy.
And it felt, even for Hunter and Wrecker, laced with fear. Even down to like the great scene of Fee dropping them was like, that's kind of where they're at emotionally. They're free falling and having to face trauma that this is not as low stakes or as easy as it used to be. Ken, how do you feel about those ideas?
Yeah, there was a legit pause in my soul that Wrecker, this might be Wrecker's end, and that speaks to what you're talking about. Do I, you know, if you were to pull back or stop eating my breakfast burrito while I'm watching this and really think about it, I don't think Wrecker would have died here, but because of not just an episode that we all had our hearts broken over, but just what you're talking about, the journey here so far, you have to be aware of it. The stakes have been raised and the costs have been felt before, so. Just the way they're highlighting Wrecker, you know, he tosses Rampart, by the way, in a really effortlessly, which is not, it can't be easy to do even with his strength. It's a human, limp human body. Just boom. But
nothing to Wrecker.
The way they've zoomed in just a little bit of focus on Wrecker, I thought, oh no, this could be it again. Right. And I just think that speaks to the pain we felt before. So it is, yes, I think you're right. It is even more important for Wrecker and Hunter to realize we have to do this again. And it's a different feel. And like I said earlier, there's no happy, scrappy crabs chasing after them on the beach. The stakes are raised forever.
Yeah, no, there's a little bit of banter, but it isn't light and easy going.
Yeah.
Jennifer, were you worried for Hunter and Wrecker? Did you feel the sort of tension of this isn't easy for them anymore?
I felt like at first this felt very reminiscent of the earlier season, right?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
And so right away, I kind of just was like, I don't want to say zoning. This is terrible. I was kind of zoning out. I'm like, okay. But then there was a moment where it clicked in with me where I was like, oh, wait. No, the stakes are much, the stakes are high. This is crucial. And then I got worried and I was like, oh no, could this be the end for Hunter or Wrecker? But it was just so funny how I forget, like with the Beast before, where I was just kind of like, oh, here we go again. And the fun action scenes.
Mm-hmm.
Oh no, this is not a fun action scene. This is not a fist pumping kind of action scene. This is a, oh crap, my heroes, one of them could die. Like this is serious. So it was a journey.
I think I'm also being affected not just by the tech memories, but by they've had a lot of fails this season. Like the main crew, right? I mean, Mm-hmm. I'm forever going to be thinking of that shot that Crosshair didn't quite make last episode, mm-hmm. of just like, mm-hmm. That's me facing my fear of like, what if the tracker falls in the ocean? Ken, what were you going to say?
Oh, Jed, I'm with you. I don't want you to feel alone. Often, sometimes like an action sequence like this, when it's still going, my mind immediately goes, oh, great, a chance to respond to some emails. And it's not even that I want to do that. or this is our job to review things and dive into it. But sometimes it's like, God, I got juggernauts doing things. Okay. It's just the problem of life right now. So don't beat yourself up. But it's a wonderful sequence when you revisit it.
Yeah, I think for me, I perk up because I think sometimes action scenes are like, let's fill the quota. That's a part mm-hmm. of Star Wars. So mm-hmm. let's keep it coming. And, you know, as a fan, sometimes I'm like, yeah, it's the adventure serial roots. Keep the action coming. And I think I kind of perk up to be like, does it support what I'm feeling emotionally or not? Mm-hmm. And I think that's why I engage with them. If I feel like an action scene is like, yeah, I get it. And like, there's some episodes of the Clone Wars. I love the Clone Wars. But there's some episodes where it's like, I know what's going on, and now it's just, oh, that's a lot of lasers. Oh, it's a lot of clones who died. And sometimes even watching with my wife, she's like, oh, I love these episodes. That one was a lot of shooting and falling. So yeah. I think for me, it's always a fascinating balance of how do you keep that just like the mm-hmm. surface level adventure serial fun of Star Wars that involves cool action, right. And how much do you imbue it with meaning and make the audience feel throughout the action, as opposed to just like cool explosion.
Mm-hmm. Right. Mm-hmm.
So I want to be sure to talk a little bit about the Omega scenes. Crosshair is quite kind of explicit about what this means for him to face his fear and return to begin the journey to a place of trauma. Omega's literally returning to a place of trauma. Ken, how did you feel about those scenes? What meaning or emotion did you get from the Omega scenes?
First of all, I appreciate that Hemlock's got a Bond villain speech going, so we can get some even more clarification on what's going on with M counts and necromancing. And we're so close to necromancing. We're almost there doing some necromancing. But I liked how they were direct. They were simple. There wasn't a lot there. There was just what is, going on with Omega going back. They tried to forge the connection with Emery. Emery is, they're playing it well, man. It's not going to be a fast switch. Again, that's why I feel there's, everyone's in some sort of captivity. We had the great conversation with her and Nalase last week of, I don't have the power to do this. Like, don't you? I think so. Emery's still realizing that. And now it's like her own face is back to haunt her, or at least challenge her to move forward in some way. So I thought the scenes, as minimal as they were, especially the stuff with Emery was very effective. And Hemlock, shout out to Jimmy Simpson. Jimmy Simpson, never trust a McPoyle. Always sunny. Yeah. I'll tell you that. But like, it's just understated villainry. You know, he's a big, big villain, but it's that calmness, the walking up. It's like, even when you expected, she's going to see the kids we met last week, Jackson and whatever and whatnot. It just, the journey there is chilling and it's mm-hmm. effective. Love the scenes.
I maybe they've talked about this in interviews, but he did monologue a little bit like a Bond villain, mm-hmm. but the hand thing is very Bond villain too, of like, there is some physical manifestation of, you know, his interior wounds. Mm-hmm. And I love that little undercurrent of rubbing the hand. The calm villain thing is always like the, you know, let me pull you in, because then the villain's going to absolutely lose it. I'd be very curious to see if Hemlock loses it, if there's some, you know, screaming, spittle, some hair falling out of place by the end.
The final moment.
Or he'll just calmly accept, like, yes, the explosion is coming for me. Well, I did my best. Boom. Yeah. Jennifer, what did you get out of the Omega scenes in this episode?
Loved them. That was where I get pulled in every time. And even though we're back to where we started, that's when I was on the edge of my seat, because I'm like, oh, what's going to happen now? Because now we know things that are going on. Emery, Jimmy Simpson's performance is so great, because like you said, he really draws you in. And even though I know he's leading her to not a great place, like, it kind of felt like he was saying, you're a value, and we really want to work with you, and you have a great resume, and we can really help you shine here, right? And it's like, oh no, he's leading her to somewhere bad. I just thought that was so well done. And I love seeing the complexity with Omega's choice, the fear, but also the, you know, and her kind of like hoping for Emery to do something. Right. I love it. Love it all. And the final scene, oh my goodness, with the children.
Yeah. Yeah. I think what I loved about, her fear, but she was also like, you know, she wasn't like kind of stereotypical spunky kid, you know,
no,
lipping off, stomping on feet,
right.
You know,
right.
Trying to escape. It was a real, it had like vibes of Luke handing himself over to Vader in Return of the Jedi. I'm like, yep, yeah. I know what this is and I'm not fighting it.
Right.
Yeah. So to go from that to seeing her kind of looking drained, like I almost took it like they took a lot of blood from her and like she was drained. But I think the biggest kind of gut punch to me was obviously her trauma at seeing the kids, but the significance of Hemlock's last line being, "This is your new home."
Oh, yeah.
And for Omega, you know, when we met her, she felt so isolated on Kamino in a cold, sterile environment, and that this is, she wanted to see the galaxy. She loves Fee because Fee goes and has weird adventures and liberates wonders, and she wants to see different, you know, skies with different colors. And a part of the horror and a part of that sort of return to the belly of the beast, I think, is like that end beat really returned her to sort of her original trauma of I want to see beyond these white sterile walls, and like you're locked back in the exact original trauma of your life of wanting out was really powerful to me.
Yeah. And even deeper in it, right? Like now you're in the basement.
Yeah.
You're locked away.
Yeah. You don't even get a routine. You don't even get to go feed cute animals. Nope. Yeah. Nope. 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 Yep. You're an experiment and that's where you're going to be. Yeah. Along those lines, one of the other big ideas that I wanted to talk about is it's evergreen, I think, in all of Bad Batch, but it's what made me feel like some of the action scenes and the imagery of the episode were more resonant of, you know, the entire story of the clones has always been how much agency do they have? They're individuals, as we keep talking about. Yoda makes that clear at the very beginning of the Clone Wars animated series. But this Bad Batch has totally been about they're cut loose. They're betrayed by the Empire. Now, can they decide who they want to be? Can they have agency? Nope, they're rounded up on Tantus. In a lot of this episode felt like visual and practical reminders of the sort of rigid machinery of the Empire, you know, both literally, symbolically, socially, with even just the way you speak to Rampart, the way you speak to Hemlock. And it highlighted those moments that you were talking about, Ken, where characters wanted their agency and were advocating for agency in the face of all of this imperial machinery. I think that quote of Omega saying, "Emery, you don't have to do this." And Emery saying, "I'm sorry, but I do," is basically like really tapping into sort of theme statement of Bad Batch of clones have agency. And Emery's like, "I'm sorry. I disagree. We don't, we are absolutely trapped in this machinery and we can't get away." Rampart really pushing on Crosshair, calling him a number, assuming that he's still a killer, kind of saying, "You think you have power. You think you have kidnapped me. You think you have leverage. You don't have leverage. I have all the leverage." So even Rampart being betrayed by the system is still like, "No, Crosshair, you can't escape the system. I'm in power, just like when I was your literal boss." And then just all the, you know, images of like a bridge that literally closes. So you cannot go forward. Those great establishing shots of how incredibly long and monotonous the prison was. Omega marching through this gate of lasers to be contained in an even smaller space. There's so much great design choices that are about this great classic Star Wars story of this is one of the things that's evil about the Empire is the utter rigidity of the system and how much once you're in it. You know, there are sensors everywhere. There are shields everywhere. There are alarms everywhere. You cannot move. You cannot make a single choice for yourself, I thought was really powerful. Ken, did you have any sort of thoughts or reactions to that imperial machinery.
Yeah, you know what I react to a lot is yeah, and all that's true that what you're saying there, it's the use of, you know, we're still in this period of time where the empire is using their old gear, right? It's still the republic out there sometimes. The shift is well into its process, but with TK troops having bad days, not unlike battle droids back in the day, but just seeing the troop transports, the dropships, seeing the juggernauts. Yes, we're familiar with them as prison ships, but they were there on Kashyyyk to defend it. And to see that that's all now part of this restrictive machinery. There's themes of what was once good, maybe now being used for something else. And what do you want to do? Do you want to rise above that? And I think that's some of what Emery's trapped in as well. But mm-hmm. Yeah, that is not lost to me. It's just a byproduct of the era, sure, but the way it's used, the way it's presented is really effective to me, to reminding me of the nature of the empire at this point in the galaxy.
Mm-hmm. Jennifer, how did you or Mala feel about the sort of the imperial machinery and feeling choked?
It made me feel a little choked and just kind of, it's just like so sterile. That's why I think I had a hard time in certain sections really focusing, because aesthetically, it's just not, I don't like it. It makes me upset. Right. And it was also, this might have been my phone, it was a little dark in the earlier scenes. I was like, oh, I need to turn off the brightness. I just couldn't see a lot. So that's where, again, I think watching it on a TV or even a computer probably would have been better. But it's just not, I don't like it. It makes me upset.
So, it's that's understandable. It's it makes me really like fist pump for the heroes, because I so want them to have their agency and to push back in the action moments where they do smash through the bridge. I think that's what was fist bumping for me, not because, I mean, it was cool, well-directed action, but it was like, yeah, don't you block in our heroes. You can't block me in Empire. It like gives me that emotion. Final thought on that. You guys have both said a lot of great things about Omega and the sort of the dance with the whispering Bonneville and Hemlock. I always thought that was this real cruelty of suggesting that Omega has a choice when she doesn't. It's just the first line in the show. Turning yourself over was a wise decision, Hemlock says. And Omega did decide this is her agency. She's coming back, I think, ultimately, not as a captor, but ultimately she'll be as a liberator, I think. But she's still walking into a horrific prison, and the condescension of going, great choice. And then by the end, I'm not asking, you know, Hemlock's not asking, would you like this to be your new home? You know, and Jennifer, to your great point of him kind of talking to her, like she's got a great resume, that line, you are a vital piece to our work here, Omega.
Right.
Is that really like, you know, you're doing a great job here. We really appreciate what you do here. You're killing it, which is why you're going to work on Saturday. And we're telling you that. We're not asking you. We're telling you you're going to work on Saturday. But just to let you know, here's a gold star and a cupcake. You're the best. And it's still not a choice. You know, there's, it's a great little horrific dance with Hemlock that just does make me, is a very, I believe in pacifism. And also I want a little doll so I can just choke Hemlock.
he's become a great villain. And Rampart, I kind of agree with what you were saying, Joseph, earlier, even just reacting to Jen's reaction to Rampart of just like, at first Rampart was like, it's another cold, sterile Imperial guy. And he was fine and great for the show, but I didn't take to him as much, but Hemlock shows up and I was, my initial reaction, other than I'm a fan of Jimmy Simpson, obviously, but like, it was like, all right, he's a weirdo with a glove and he's got a, you know, Brad Pitt from Fury haircut. Got it. He's gone past all that to just, because he doesn't move off of his cadence, his rhythm, his evil pace. I don't know. And because he's in Tantus, which is this thing that even Tarkin's like, nah, I don't know what the hell you guys are doing over there, but I don't know if I like it. You know, and Vader's probably not aware. It's all just ominous and menacing. And he's grown in my estimation as a great Star Wars villain.
Yeah. I mean, it's just kind of great passive aggressive. The subtext of almost everything he says is F you, even with Tarkin, like last week, his delivery of like, the funding is all I require. It's just like, Yeah, he's got a very punchable voice. Well done. Well done, writers and Jimmy Simpson. Any other big picture thoughts from you, Jennifer?
No, I don't have anything. I really do like Hemlock. I wish that he could be in live action. I wish Jimmy Simpson could bring the character to live action. I think that it would be really great because he tricked me. Like, I know who he is. I know he's not leading her to a good place, but he's making her feel special. And I thought, oh, maybe he has a special job for her. Oh, maybe I literally, even though I, right? Yeah, exactly. When he led her to the place, I literally gasped and went, oh no,
the kid.
Like, as if I didn't know that that's where he was leading her to. Like, what a great performance.
Yeah, I knew he was taking her to the kids, but I also kind of felt like, is he gonna show her some big secret? Like,
yeah,
is he gonna show her like a wizened half naked bad Palpatine clone?
Yep. I'm sure the three of us are not alone, but I had that, much like that 2% half beat of Recordine. I had a vision of just like, hello. Like,
exactly.
Oh no. But yeah, so I'm glad it was the poor kids in the captivity.
We've only managed to clone Palpatine's left leg, but we'll get the rest with your help. Yeah. Any other big picture thoughts from you, Ken?
No, I think this was kind of a direct episode, and that's not a bad thing. I think this is what was exactly needed as we're heading into the, we're past the back half. We're deep into the back nine of this golf course. And I think this was an episode that just was like, yeah, here's what's happening. Here's the stakes and we're moving it forward. And, the fighting's going to have to happen at some point. We got some juggernaut on juggernaut action, which we'll talk about more in the action sequence stuff. But yeah, I'm happy with this episode being as direct as it was.
Yeah, I really agree. I think it was I'm never going to say this was, one of my favorite episodes of Bad Batch ever. I think it was a very direct episode, but I appreciate that even in a really direct episode, they put so much work into making the audience feel it. Mm-hmm. And I think, having Omega get the horrific manipulation from Hemlock, and seeing Rampart not want Crosshair to have any power or agency, those things, seeing the kind of fear of like, it ain't as easy as it used to be for the Bad Batch to just bop into Imperial facility. Right. All those feelings that are generated by this episode, I will carry into the next episodes and make me want to root and fist bump even more for the heroes.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, we're going to take a quick break and we're going to be back to talk about tanks and all sorts of great fun back in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 40% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition Smart Bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
And we are back, continuing to discuss Season 3, Episode 12 of The Bad Batch, entitled Juggernaut. Hey, the title of the episode is a tank, but maybe it has some other meanings too. We can discuss that. So we love discussing the canon, the lore, the connection to other stories. Really, like one of the main characters. You know, they always say Sex and the City. New York's really one of the characters. Mm-hmm. I think in this episode of Bad Batch, that those tanks were one of the characters. According to old Wikipedia, this was an advanced one from the ones that we saw in the Clone Wars. The Clone Wars era, the Juggernaut tank was an HAVWA6 Juggernaut, a thing I never successfully memorized for trivia and never will. In the Mandalorian era, the episode on Morak, we see what Wikipedia tells me is an HCVWA9.2. I think that's for me, that's where my knowledge to know Star Wars trivia ends. It's like when it sounds like an air conditioning unit, I'll just call it a juggernaut tank or a turbo tank, and I'm good with that. But to your point, Ken, I do like the meaning of a massive, massive tank that was built for the Clone Wars to support the ATDs and you know, used by clones. And evolving into a different tank but similar tank that the Imperial uses to just the Empire uses to just contain people. So, Ken, what were your juggernaut tank thoughts, either canon or sort of emotional meaning?
I first of all, just on a Star Wars nerd level of vehicles and everything, I do love them. They're an underrated vehicle, and I did not take them as much until they were used in Rogue One. Just that one shot of a juggernaut flying over that camera in the breakout of Jyn, I was just like, oh yeah, and then that took me back to Revenge of the Sith in a way I didn't expect. And so I love it anytime they show up. Also, I didn't, you know, the trailer for this season is so long ago now, and kind of to what you were saying earlier, Jed, of like, I just watched the Rampart episodes and I kind of don't remember them. It's not about the show or Rampart, it's just about our lives. I sat down to watch this episode and the title comes up, Juggernaut. And we probably talked about this title. We probably talked about the Juggernaut in the trailer, because now I remember it was in the trailer. But I literally went, oh, it'd be cool if this episode was just about a Juggernaut tank. Then when it kind of happened, I was like, I maybe should be paying attention more, I guess. But I just was overjoyed that being a setting. It's just made for action. And again, the use of them, we can dive into the themes on it. But I just love that. And also, I've been rewatching Light and Sound. It's been a treadmill watch for me. And I forgot that there's basically kind of this design was maybe in play for Hoth.
Yeah, Joe Johnston designed it as an option for Hoth before in the Walker direction. So yeah, it has that Star Wars legacy as well.
Yeah, I love that feel as well. So it all came rushing back to me.
Yeah, I remembered the scene in the trailer that is, you know, Fee saying not a very stealthy exit, you know, boys. And I think it cuts Wrecker mid jump. It was definitely one of those moments of like, as we've talked about, like trailers need to be made for everybody. You need some exciting action scenes. But I did have a moment early on in the episode of like, yeah, I know the last beat of this episode because of the trailer, at least from the action. But yep. Jennifer, are you a big tank fan? Were you excited that this episode was at least half about tanks?
can you guess? Can you guess? I have to accept my where I am as my Star Wars fandom geekdom. There are certain things I geek out over, obviously, creatures and things. And I like vehicles. I like when they're weird, like the chicken walkers or you know, the ATM-6, the gorilla walkers. Like, I like when they're kind of odd. This to me is very much like a thing that we would see, like a tank in real life, right? And so I don't really gravitate towards that. And I just have to accept that. I don't get excited when I see a tank, but I love the history of it. I love the fact that it, you know, was made by Joe Johnston and all that. But yeah, I'm like, it's a tank. Now, if they were on the back of some crazy creature, count me in, right? That's when I get excited.
Yeah. When they design a Zillow tank. Yeah. That would be
it. Now we're talking. Tank,
yeah. Yeah. I think for me, I agree. It's one of those Star Wars designs that I think I've come to appreciate because it expands the palette of what Star Wars can be. I think probably when I first saw it in Revenge of the Sith, I would think I was probably like, tank. Mm-hmm. But I think I've come to appreciate that elements of Star Wars that come a little close to the real world that in a way kind of ironically expands the Star Wars palette, that not everything has to be bonkers. So then I can appreciate the more bonkers, which is always going to be my favorite, but then appreciate things like, it's a tank. And hey, in the High Republic, there's a Jedi named Douglas. And there's a character in, you know, Andor where we just get a shot of his socks. And it's strange to me because like, never and think about socks in Star Wars. Yeah. And his name's Tim with two M's.
Oh, you know, yeah, Tim.
We got a Tim and a Douglas. That. Like, we have half an RPG group in Star Wars. It just guys, just dudes, right. Just Tim and Douglas. Form an improv group.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah. So I totally agree with you about the aesthetic of it, but I think I've come to be a little connected to it just because it. We've seen it in the Clone Wars. We've seen it in Rogue One. We've seen it in Mandalorian and imagining a little bit of the Bad Batch's relationship to it. Like, yeah, it's something they're very familiar with because it used to be on their team and now it's not. And now they're literally in the belly of the beast. They're in this, commandeered Imperial machinery, which used to be like home to them and is now a dangerous place to be.
Yeah.
Great thoughts on the legacy and the aesthetics. Ken, why do you think the episode is called Juggernaut? Do you think just like, I think the names are, particularly this season, are a fine balance of there's nothing too pulpy. There's no Attack of the Clones. There's no, you know, Revenge of the anything. Some of them are maybe even to my taste, you know, getting into the too generic of a title. Juggernaut is a little different, a little more specific. What do you feel that's about?
It could just be, you know, sometimes you title your song based on the one word in the chorus and it just makes some sense. If the chorus is battling juggernauts, that might be it. But yeah, I could dive into some meanings there. And what is truly the juggernaut of this story? Is it Omega saving the day? Is Tantus, the belly of the beast, they are all ending up heading to, which seems to be the case. It's kind of something we've been looking for. I can play around with all the meetings there too, but I also just like it for tanks because that's what I use.
It could have been called Attack of the Tanks. Jennifer, do you get anything out of the name Juggernaut?
Yeah, well, I think it's interesting because it's a huge, powerful, and overwhelming force or institution. Mm-hmm. And what's interesting about the name is that it can reference any of those things, right? It can reference Tantus and that institution. It can reference the literal tank. It can reference this juggernaut of a bond that this crew has, right? And that they are the juggernaut, the unsuspecting. So I like that. I like that. It's vague, but tantalizing.
Yeah. Yeah. I think I like it because what was perhaps most emotionally affecting about this episode is that, that Imperial machinery. So I think I really liked it, embracing it as an institution. Yeah. This is what they have to face. They haven't talked about it as much explicitly this season, but it was so the tension with Echo in season two of like, we should turn and face the juggernaut. We should fight the Empire on some level and kind of come to the decision of like, okay, well, we can't take the juggernaut of the Empire down, but we can at least do right by our brothers and go around saving them. So I think a lot of the ideas of Bad Batch, of who are the clones going to be? What are they going to do? Is like, how do they face the juggernaut? And this is of the Empire. And this is an episode where like, it's part of the reason Crosshair is like, yeah, we have to break into Imperial facility and talk to a little Imperial weasel who's going to lie to us. We have to poke the juggernaut of the Empire to do this. And I think that's where it hit me emotionally. But I agree with the band name assessment of like, why is that band called Nirvana? You decide.
You decide.
Yeah. Not a lot of canon stuff for me. Mm-hmm. It's fun to see an Imperial prison planet, and lakes on Erebus had this kind of multi-colored shimmer, like Rhydonium when it explodes. So it's like, maybe they're mining Rhydonium, and maybe something more will blow up yet. Ken, prison planet thoughts?
I'm with you on the Imperial labor camps. Fun to see them as well, even though it's an absolute horror and it's been explored. But even going back to Rogue One, the first time I think we really spent some time with them, to my memory, not counting books or comics. Love that. And then, from Mandalorian to of course, Andor being the one that's perhaps the most affected. It is part of their system, and it should be treated in feared as such.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Jennifer, you have any thoughts on Imperial prison planets?
I like it. Especially like it with Andor, made such a great storyline. And I like the name Erebus. I immediately thought of Cerebus, right? Mm. That's that the dog. Is it the dog?
Yeah, the three-headed dog. Yeah.
A monster, basically. So, yeah, I like it.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
It was nice to see all of the different beings on the planet and in a episode that I think did focus on agency and being trapped in the machinery. I do love that they're like, yeah, free them.
Yeah.
Cause some chaos. Let's see what the Trandoshan can get up to.
Yeah.
Really, the only other kind of canon thing for me is the sort of internal canon of Bad Batch that almost every episode continues the tech references and really keeping him alive. Mm-hmm. And is such a powerful part of season two was and tech falling for each other a little bit. So I really liked checking back in on that. I liked Fee saying, you must be Crosshair. Tech told me all about your sparkling personality. Mm-hmm. Any friend of Brown Eyes is a friend of mine. Hearing that nickname for Tech was great, but also just her saying, you must be Crosshair. Tech told me all about your sparkling personality. We get to see it a little bit, but they spent a lot of time on Pabu, and I think, Fee and Tech went on a lot of just walks around the island, and Fee just grilled him about his life. I think they went on many, many first dates, that it was evocative of that for me. Jennifer, how do you feel about the ongoing Tech references or these in particular?
It was sad, and it was sweet that she had like this kind of little pet name for him, and that he confided in her. Like, it just speaks to their relationship. It's just, it's such a small moment, and yet it says so much about that character.
Mm-hmm. I really agree. Ken, how do you feel about Fee talking about old Brown Eyes?
Yeah, it was sweet. And I just was glad she didn't like turn a little bit to her right on Pabu and see the tech goggles display there. But yeah. And I know we had a discussion on the previous episode about is Tech 2.0 still in play? And I know CX2 is considered a new character, but you know what? My iPhone 14 is not considered my iPhone 13. So a Tech 2.0 would be a new character in my mind. But this was a week where I felt less and less like that, because it just seemed like the presence of Tech was felt, and that's kind of where they're leaving it.
Yeah, no, I think that I don't have any new speculation. All these references could just be honoring the actual loss.
Yeah.
It could be keeping him alive in the audience's heart. So it is more powerful when there is some tech storytelling. And I think with the sort of CX2, people kindly tweeted at us the Jennifer Corbett head writer saying that CX2 is a new character. I feel like there's still wiggle room. I think for me, the main thing with CX2 is I think we spent a lot of time with that character. I think if there was sort of nothing to it, just pop that helmet off and let us see that he's a reg.
Yep, exactly.
Maybe there is not a big reveal, no Cody, no Tech, no cross tech super combo of the entire Bad Batch. Mm-hmm. I don't care if it's a mystery answer.
Yeah.
But we spent enough time with that character. I want some emotional resolution. I want there to be a reason other than he's just a. I feel like the way the story has been told, it has built up my expectations that there's a story there, not that he's just an antagonist, simply an antagonist. If he has no new identity, I still want him to have a character as the antagonist of this season.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Yeah, the camera angles don't lie. It's just like when you have like a celebrity cameo, they do that nice zoom in of the celeb, right? Because you're like, oh, that's Robert De Niro or whatever. They have done so many close-ups of his helmeted face that I'm like, he is important. I'm tech 2.0. I'm not giving up hope.
Yeah. Or fear.
We've spent time on his perspective. He thinks Crosshair was weak to walk away. He's desperate to prove himself. Like we're getting to know who this character is up to a point. So can't wait to find out all the rest. Pop that helmet off and discover it's Hondo after all. Can't wait. Surprise. So let's talk favorite moments. We could talk about action. There's a lot of action. I think there were actually a few more kind of comedy and whimsy moments, certainly some great heartbreaking drama. Ken, where do you go? What were some favorite moments for you?
Yeah, again, juggernaut on juggernaut action here. This is two behemoths shooting at each other, running at each other. I loved all the action there. Just some, like I said, fun Star Wars stuff going on there. I love their weaponry, the little rockets that come out. This is like a playset you want as a kid. Like, this is the set you want. So that, a lot of people are talking about the juggernaut jump, as they should. It was all cool to me. And like I said, it was a little burst of Star Wars action that I needed. Not that I've been missing it or I think Bad Batch has been without it. It just was every once in a while you're reminded of the playground fun you had. And that's what I took for a lot of those moments.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think like that fight with Asajj is some of the best Star Wars action. But this is just kind of that was Asajj just putting him in the place and getting him to shut up. Asajj settling down some rowdy boys. It was high stakes action. So I thought it was really great. My favorite part of the tank on tank action was the taking out the wheels, you know, the heroes knowing how the tanks work better and seeing it crash. And then that just beautifully illogical tank jump. Like I don't know how Hunter got in the air, and I don't care. Yeah, it was great.
Yeah.
Jennifer, how did you feel about some of the tank action? Were you thrilled by it?
It was fun. I gotta go back and watch this and give it a proper viewing. I mean, because I just was really, every time I think about the episode, I think about the end, which is my favorite.
Yeah. Well, tell me a little bit about that. What were the beats that grabbed you in that?
I'd say I really love seeing Emery's relationship with Omega and seeing how it evolves. And I just want her to like give her a hug. I just want them to finally, for Emery to finally come over to the good side. Right. But it's a fun little dance that keeps happening, but just those little glimpses of, I'm glad you're okay. Or whatever she said, I'm glad you're safe. Something like that. I like that. I think it's intriguing. And seeing Omega kind of figuring out what is happening in this relationship. Mm-hmm. And I loved the note, as depressing as it was, seeing my little kids again in that terrible room and seeing my Omega going into that room. But then I was left with this like hope, which was surprising, because I'm like, oh, this is, she's gonna make something happen, right? And she's gonna rally these kids and they are gonna bust out of here. And I got really excited. I'm like, oh, this is setting up for the next beat. So even though it was quite depressing, I liked that I felt that hope.
I really agree with you. That exchange at the beginning of Emery saying, I'm glad you're safe, which is like as far as she's gonna go with her empathy right now, because she feels trapped in the machinery, I think. And Omega's heartbreaking, am I? Actually safe. I really agree with you about the end, Jennifer. I think we talked about last week about Hemlock explaining, you know, why children, of like, well, because they don't really know what's going on. You know, we don't most adult Jedi or high M count subjects, specimens are gone anyway. But also for me, I was talking about filling in that sort of fear of Palpatine's like, no, don't put Quinlan Vos in there. He's going to be a problem. And I felt that hope at the end of like, you fools, you suckers.
Yes.
You know, she's not, you know, biologically or maturity level, like a full adult yet. But this whole story is about her coming into her own. Right. And they have unleashed a danger to themselves by putting her in there. I mean, I think the second she sees that doll, she knows she's got Emery. Right.
Exactly.
You know, before, when she's been trying to get through to Emery, I think it's just kind of hope, right? Of like, you're one of us. You're my sister. How could you not believe these things? You should believe these things. Once she sees that Emery gave Ava that doll, she'll be like, oh, I gotcha. Mm-hmm. You're going to help us. You're going to help me. Yeah. So I really agree with the hope.
Yeah, I think this whole series ends now with the door opens and it is Quinlan Voss. And they're like, all right, you three kids, go. You're on the path. Yeah. The path. Wow. Coming next fall. Oh, that's the spinoff right there.
What? Mm-hmm.
It's coming. It's coming. Couple of the little action things I enjoyed. I always like fights in high places. No, I'm a little traumatized with tech, but I did love the TK troopers just being hurled off the tank.
Oh yeah,
that was distance. Good.
Best yeah, trooper day.
Wrecker saying we're running out of road, and like, you know, some of the roads I've driven on in Los Angeles recently, I feel a little too close to that. Crumbling road, no guardrail. So I thought that was absolutely great. Very funny seeing Rampart's body just flung like a sack of potatoes.
Not easy.
Yeah, not easy. Ken, what were some other things for you?
There, in the stormtrooper sequence, when they're on the tank and everything, there was the one that's like, he's fallen, then he hangs on the side, and then he gets actually knocked off. You know, from Indiana Jones to Solo, through all of action movie history, we always got the hero is about to get knocked off, that gets pulled back up or saved, right? And I like to see, like, oh, that's what happens when you just get sheared off at the side.
Just poof. Yep. I really like that. I also really loved Fee's stealth drop.
You
know, not to make too much of it, but again, I think this episode is about, you know, agency and being trapped in machinery, and the fact that she's like a pirate and a rogue and has that, you know, Han Solo, Poe Dameron, lots of other characters sort of like make it up as I go spirit. I know these secret tricks. And it was just, I thought it was actually just really well done to see, like, oh, it's not like she's got some button that jams signals of like the, no, I cut out the engines and have to do weird pedal work.
Yeah.
And, you know, seeing them fall fast enough that Hunter's helmet is floating, I just thought it was really well executed. Like, I felt it in my gut. It was a nice ride.
Yeah. I agree with that.
Yeah. Other stuff, Ken?
I enjoyed a little exchange there of Rampart saying, please, you're not going to kill me. And the crosshair just kind of said, not yet. I hope that happens. I hope we see it. I don't know if that's too dark, but I hope that that happens.
Yeah, no, that'd be great. Any other moments for you that you wanted to highlight, Jennifer?
No, I forgot about that. I like that moment. It still speaks to that. He still is crosshair. He's the crosshair that we knew that he would say something like that. I liked that. And I loved that stormtrooper moment. The trooper moment where he's like on the side and just gets it doesn't give him a hero's death. Right. There's no close up. Mm-hmm. There's no like tension. It's just it's just really, quite frankly, it's very real life.
Right. Yep. Yep. Right. And the ongoing story of like, yeah, no, you're effective because there's just too many of you, TK troopers, stormtroopers, but you're no bad batch. The last thing I wanted to share is I thought that there were a couple of great record comedy beats, which, you know, still not as sort of bold and brassy as before, but I liked it when the TK trooper asks about the people up on the top think anything, and Wrecker says yep for the big punch. Is great delivery. And Crosshair's remember plan 55. That pause for just long enough to think, yeah, Wrecker's not gonna remember, and he's like, oh yeah.
Right.
That'd be me. Great stuff. That'd be me.
Yeah. Anything else for you, Ken, or shall we move on?
I just want to point out one thing. The Imperial standards falling. There should not be an officer with a beard. That is a violation of Imperial protocol and shows that, you know, they were crumbling from within even from the beginning.
I love that Imperial because he actually looked competent. Yeah. And we've got a lot of sort of like Imperials that are sort of coded as sniveling, rich, entitled Nepo Imperial babies. And we've got a lot of the, I'm trying to use the right words for this, 'cause I think it is a trope that really needs to be examined, but a lot of the sort of, plump decadent Imperials who look like they are, you know, rich and wealthy and all that. We've had those sort of two extremes of the, sniveling and the sort of decadent. So to see like That guy's actually scary. Yeah. He looks like he works out and could find his way in the wilderness. He's actually scaring me.
Yes. He's like that guy I see on social media with paid posts who eats raw eggs and got steroids, but says he's natural. Yes.
Yeah. I don't like Imperials who look like TikTok influencers. That scares me.
Exactly.
Yeah.
No, he was good. He was good.
Yeah. Jennifer, was there anything you disliked or questioned in this episode?
You know, that's interesting because I saw the same thing about him with the beard and I was like, oh, he knows what he's doing. And I forgot that Disneyland, they don't let you have, well, at least they used to not let you have any facial hair. Mm.
Yeah, I think that's right.
The Empire is like Disneyland. Like, I didn't realize that.
Yeah. I don't agree with it. You know, my favorite baseball team, they only let you have a mustache and no one should have just a mustache.
Really? But why? You
know. I don't know.
What's the reasoning behind that?
It's okay. I got severely disciplined because I refused to shave my beard at work for a while. So I understand this Imperial officer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I couldn't work at Disney.
Yes. Welcome to Beard Center. We're going to break all this down. There was nothing I really disliked or questioned. I thought it was kind of funny how much traffic that cavern's getting, that hidden cavern. on Babu that he parked in it's getting a lot of traffic. Totally understand, but you're like, how'd you get here? Like, we all know it's the goddamn cavern that everybody's flying into.
Maybe put a gate up. Maybe.
few sensors is is our friend Alex and Damon joking about that as well. Mm-hmm. Well, Ken, is there anything that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on, or do you want to do 5 more minutes on beards?
Definitely do 5 more minutes. It was a great shape beard too. It's hard to get that shape. I'm looking forward to, it's going to be bittersweet to say goodbye to this series. 3 seasons, not enough. But unless you're a corporation that has to pay writers more in the 4th season, so you either reboot or rebrand or cancel, that's a different discussion, but where you only got 3 seasons, but I'm geared up for these final episodes. I'm expecting, because there hasn't been, you know, the reveals along the way, we're building up to some big reveals, some canon answers, some emotions. I still think some death of some sort. This was a great episode just to kind of remind me we are turning the corner and barreling towards the end like we're in a runaway juggernaut tank.
Mm-hmm. Agreed. 2 little things. I wanted to shout out Rampart's messed up flippy hair.
Yeah.
We had, you know, Agent Callus and Rebels that people eventually referred to as Hot Callus. And now we have a sloppy Rampart with that beard and hair that's kind of like he's got permanent bedhead hair. I like that. Yeah. Good design. Yeah. Made him hard to recognize, but good design. Mm-hmm. And we got to spend some quality time with it. We've seen it before, but Fee's ship, the Providence, really like the design. I like the colors, and I like that it's that classic Star Wars impractically designed ship of like, how would that support its weight when it lands? Like, I love the Star Wars ships that are not very practical. So I enjoyed that. Anything else that we haven't talked about that you wanted to touch on, Jennifer?
There's only 3 episodes left, correct? Mm-hmm. 3 episodes. That is nothing. So now I know things are going to get serious. Like you said, big reveals, questions answered. I'm going to have to carve out, and anybody else out there, carve out that time to be able to watch it once, twice, the way it should be, the way it's meant to be. Because, there's going to be a lot of emotional drama for it.
Yeah. I love how much that, you know, all roads lead to Tantus and the emotional resolution of the clones having, you know, a victory of some kind that kind of maybe puts a little bit of a bow on the story of the overall clones. I think a lot of us feel that coming, hope for that, but exactly how it's going to manifest the destiny of our individual characters is so wide open. So it's really fun to be in this place where we can kind of feel the end note coming, but really don't know how we're going to get there is a great and exciting place to be.
Totally.
We always like to wrap up with a question about merch. Ken, if you could have a figure or merch of any character idea from this episode, who or what do you want?
You know, I mentioned the Juggernaut playset. That'd be something. But I'd like to, you know, they have kitchenware that's Star Wars themed. Could I get something that's with the laser walls so that I could put something like maybe the bag of jelly beans I have is behind the laser wall and I can't put my hand in there easily and it'll keep me from snacking all day. That's what I want. Some laser Star Wars kitchenware.
I think that's great. I just want a good quality action figure of Sloppy Rampart. I think they made a black series of Rampart. I want Sloppy Rampart with the hair flip. Jennifer, how about you? Any merch inspired by this episode you'd like?
I would like the Juggernaut, even though I'm not a big fan of tanks, but a Juggernaut tank, like a popcorn bucket, like how they have at Disneyland,
Yeah.
Cause ooh. I have a mouse droid one somewhere and that's been great. And then you can use it as like a vase and put flowers in it. And that's very symbolic, right? To put like this tank with the flowers. Very nice.
Yeah. Like the famous images, protest images of the, the rose and the gun. Like, yeah.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. That'd be lovely. Put some lilies in the Juggernaut. Why not? Lilies in the Juggernaut. Beautiful. That brings us home. This great episode, Lilies in the Juggernaut. Ken, want to let people know where they can find us.
We are Force Center. We're on Twitter, Threads, Instagram, and Hive at Force Center Pod. We're on Facebook at Force Center Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe on YouTube. If you listen, swing over there. Just give us a sub. If you're watching, hit that notification bell, sub. Do all those wonderful things to help this channel continue in a new decade, which is what we're in for us. Don't forget, we got merch available at tpublic.com/user/ForceCenter. You can support us directly at patreon.com/ForceCenter. Follow me at Ken Napsok or go to my website, KenNapsok.com for more. Jen, where can they find you?
You can find me on my latest Jedi beat, Carrie Fisher, on this channel, on YouTube, ForceCenter, or you can find me on all the social media sites at Jennifer Landa, TikTok at Jennifer Landa 1138.
Love it. And Mrs. Scrimshaw, you announced a lot of wonderful things with this short film, Nightmare Adorable, this week. I couldn't even keep up. What's going on? Where can they find you?
You can find me on all the social media at Joseph Scrimshaw. And you can check out my website, josephscrimshaw.com, for lots of stuff, including links to upcoming screenings of the short horror film we made called The Nightmare Adorable. We won a nice little award at a festival called Bloody Mirror, which was really nice. We got accepted into a couple more festivals. So there's more news there coming soon. So that's all going great. And I'm really appreciative of everybody, including Ken, who helped out with the film, did a wonderful performance. And so many kind Force Center friends supported literally financially Nightmare Adorable on Kickstarter. And it's all really, really deeply appreciated. We should also say we've kind of had a clog of episodes coming out all at once. We also did a breakdown of Tales of the Empire trailer. Ken and I will be getting that out on the socials. But if you happen to miss that on the podcast or YouTube, you can go check that out. We'll get more about that out later. But for now, that is it. This has been the Bad Batch Report.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.